Sports Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
It's going good. I'm almost getting used to writing 2013 on things. Almost.
Yeah, I'm not quite there yet, but thankfully our system is pretty good about doing that for us. Like a lot of things, actually, which is nice. Let's get right to it. Big game on Thursday night. We had the Lakers and the Heat. Pretty much lived up to the hype. Heat got the victory at the end when it was all said and done. LeBron James was ridiculous. 39 points on 17 of 25 shooting, 7 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 steals. Dwayne Wade gave him a lot of help. 27 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists for him, 11 of 20 shooting. Chris Bosh only 3 of 10. Ray Allen 3 of 8. They didn't need him when LeBron had it going like that. On the Lakers side, Kobe had an off-night shooting, just 8 of 25 from the field for 22 points, but he did come through in the fourth quarter with 13 on 5 of 9 shooting. Lakers had Pau Gasol back from a concussion, 12 points in 24 minutes off the bench. Lakers trailed by 9 early in the fourth, came back to tie it with under 2.5 remaining before the Heat just put on some ridiculous defense down the stretch, went on a 9-0 run to finish the game. Question is this, Kurt. Can really anyone beat Miami Heat when LeBron and Wade have it going like that?
No, I'm not sure that anybody can. I mean, maybe the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think that's the one team that, sure. that right now looks like they could be the matchup, you know, issue for them. But when you watch them defend like that, and they did this really all game, they did a really good job of pressuring the ball handlers and not letting Steve Nash and not letting Kobe Bryant get set and get the plays they wanted to get going. You know, I mean, both Pau Gasol and Dwight Howard each got 7 shots apiece. That's not enough. The Lakers have to find a way to get the ball inside, but you've got to credit Miami for part of that by taking away the passing angles and putting pressure on the ball handlers for the Lakers. And what happens is Mike D'Antoni comes into the game and tells his team, look, here's how you're going to deal with that pressure that's going to come. You're going to make quick passes, and we're going to, you know, move the ball, and ball movement will diffuse the pressure because they won't be able to keep up with the ball. The problem was the ball pressure forced these kind of rushed, hurried, errant passes, and Miami just started picking them off, going out and running, and they got a lot of easy buckets in the first half when their half-court offense wasn't working, and that kept them ahead or in the game. The Lakers could have taken control of that game in the first half if they'd stopped turning the ball over, but they couldn't handle the pressure.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. I mean, that ball pressure was very tough for the Lakers to handle, even Steve Nash and Kobe Bryant. I mean, when they're getting pressured by guys as athletic as LeBron and Wade, you know, basically as soon as they cross half court, that makes it tough. One of the things that was interesting was the way that the Heat decided to front the post. Obviously with Dwight Howard down there, you got a huge size advantage. A lot of those passes came from trying to force that ball into Dwight. Is it on D'Antoni a little bit that maybe the Lakers weren't as prepared for the possibility that the Heat might front the post like that defensively?
I think that part is part of it. I think the Lakers just aren't comfortable with, you know, if somebody fronts the post, you can swing it to the weak side and have the guy cut across and reestablish right. position on the other side and make the play. But the Lakers aren't doing that because they're just not comfortable in the offense. They're just not that comfortable with each other yet. And, you know, D'Antoni's system, such as it were, isn't, you know, as detailed a set of plays as certainly, you know, Mike Brown with the Princeton offense or a lot of coaches who like to control things. It's much more free-flowing. It's much more instinctual and wanting you to play off of what the defense gives you and just how you know how to play. And the Lakers just aren't at that comfort level yet. They're getting there, frankly. They're a lot better than they were 2 or 3 weeks ago. But the question is, do they have the time now? I mean, they just don't have the time to kind of slowly get better.
Right, and on the Lakers side, you know, we had an off night for Kobe shooting. The team had 20 turnovers for all the reasons that we just discussed. You know, they still had a shot, though, down the stretch. They're tied with 2.5 minutes to go. You mentioned it in your recap of that game. The Lakers showed a lot of improvement. You know, big difference from the last time they played a good team in Oklahoma City. Moral victories aren't really something we count on from, you know, championship-type contenders. But I don't know. The way Lakers played last night, I think a moral victory is actually okay for them at this point right now.
I think that in this case, it's about as good as they were going to get. I mean, it's still the Miami Heat coming to town on a nationally televised game, and if they are focused, I'm not sure that the Lakers can beat them, flat out. So, yeah, it's a nice step. It's just, like I said before, and I said this in story, they are playing better. I thought their Lakers half-court defense was really pretty good in that game. They did a lot of things much better than they've done. They did things well. Their problem is You know, they're 7-22. They've got a fight to make the playoffs, and 10 of their next 13 are on the road. You know, the Grammy road trip's coming up. They're getting kicked out of Staples, and they're going to have to win on the road to have any chance.
Yeah, that's going to be tough, obviously. You know, we keep saying, you know, they really just need to win approximately 2 out of every 3 the rest of the way, and that's to sneak into the 8th seed. I mean, if they do that, they'll have a good chance, especially because they have games left against the teams ahead of them in the standings. So they'll have a shot. It is going to be tough to win on the road. Wanted to ask you about Pau Gasol briefly. So he's back from his concussion, comes off the bench, plays, you know, right around 24 minutes, but he did play the entire fourth quarter. So is that a better role for him, perhaps, with this team, spelling Dwight Howard, maybe, you know, playing with the reserves a little bit throughout the game, but then, you know, making sure he's on the lineup in, or on the floor in the lineup during crunch time?
I think it is. I think it's what Mike D'Antoni would like to try. I think, you know, he's looking at the way Earl Clark has played in the starting lineup and said, you know, this is kind of A, more the style he wants to play, and B, it's just worked for them better. But Pau Gasol isn't buying in. I mean, Pau Gasol said after the game last night, I see myself as a starter. I want to start and finish games. He thinks he's earned that right. And then it becomes a locker room politic issue. I mean, you, if you're Mike D'Antoni, and this is one of those things Phil Jackson was just brilliant at doing.
Yeah.
He didn't tell you what you were going to do. He was able to convince you in this kind of case, he'd be able to find a way to get Pau Gasol to say, you know what, I want to come off the bench. Like, this is better for the team. It's better for me. I want to do this. Because in the locker room where Steve Nash and Kobe Bryant back Pau Gasol, in a lot of ways, you know, the idea to come off the bench regularly has to be Gasol's. It's going to be more awkward if it's forced upon everybody. And, you know, that's something that I don't think Mike D'Antoni has the relationship with Pau Gasol, or really just kind of the style to pull that off.
No, that's an excellent point. And, you know, Phil Jackson, exactly what you said. He'd just make sure it was Pau's idea. You know, somehow he'd plant those seeds. He'd have his, you know, back then it'd be Derek Fisher, Kobe Bryant, the veteran guys, you know, talk about it, what's best for the team, plant those seeds. And then you're right. Magically, Gasol would go to Phil and go, hey, you know, I think I should maybe come off the bench. So, you know, Mike D'Antoni doesn't have that relationship. But how hard would it be to start Gasol, let him play the first 6 minutes, you know, with the starters, and then the rest of the game, you know, second, third quarter, mix him in with the reserves, and then have him, you know, basically play the entire fourth the way he did last night?
Oh, I think it could be done, and I think, you know, that's ultimately one of those things the Lakers have to figure out now, is exactly what their rotations are and who's going to play with who and where. You know, maybe Earl Clark brings athleticism and energy off the bench that, you know, the team can use. The thing is, they're at a spot right now where they finally got everybody kind of healthy. They can start to see what works. He can start to experiment with lineups, but you're back to the whole they don't really have time to experiment anymore problem.
Yeah, the time is going to be the issue with the Lakers, but I don't know. It's kind of an encouraging sign, I think, the way they played for the majority of the night against the Heat. We shall see. All right, let's move on. We had the All-Star starters announced yesterday. No surprises there. Kind of thank goodness, right, when we talk about Jeremy Lin and then the possibility that he could have snuck in there ahead of Chris Paul. Chris Bosh didn't overtake Kevin Garnett, so it was basically the starting five for each conference that we expected. You had posted your picks for the reserves. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about that. In the West, so in the reserves, you ended up with LaMarcus Aldridge and Serge Ibaka instead of a guy like Zach Randolph, who, you know, you did mention. Zach Randolph's, you know, numbers are good, 16.4 points, 11.6 rebounds on the season. Memphis is fourth in the West. How do you justify sort of leaving Zach Randolph off of the All-Star team?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I think Serge Ibaka has earned it just because of the way he stepped up his game this season. I mean, he's putting up fantastic numbers and has really become a solid scoring option for them, giving them really good rebounds on top of the shot blocking and the defense. So I think Ibaka earned the spot. Oh, I've debated the Aldridge and Randolph thing back and forth for a long time. And at the end of the day, I think Aldridge has to carry more of an offensive load for Portland, even though, you know, Damian Lillard's obviously doing a lot of the setup and doing a lot of it. I think Aldridge is more the guy and on an improving Portland team than, you know, Randolph, who has Marc Gasol and has some other, you know, help, and has Rudy Gay, has some other guys on the team. So it was kind of along those lines, but I looked back at it and I'm like, you know, but I don't have any Grizzlies on my All-Star team, and that's really not fair to the number four team in the West. So it's, it was, you know, when you get down to these last couple, you always feel like you're leaving guys off that should be on, and it was a tough call. But, you know, if I were making my votes, I would have voted for Aldridge.
Yeah, the only thing with Aldridge that I think might hurt him is the slow start, right? I mean, there was there was a lot of talk about how, hey, why isn't he playing in the post? He's just settling for jumpers. He's not engaged. He doesn't want to be there. But anybody that's watched Portland recently over the last few weeks, he's been a monster in the post. He's gotten back to doing, you know, what we expected him to do. The other thing I think he kind of has working against him is all the Damian Lillard press. I mean, Lillard's been fantastic. He's the runaway, you know, favorite to take home Rookie of the Year. He has game-winning shots. He dropped 37 on the Warriors, just hitting ridiculous threes. I mean, Lillard's getting a lot of press. I think that might take away a little bit from Aldridge. And, you know, the fact that the Blazers aren't in the playoff hunt, you know, I think also hurts his chances.
Yeah, I think the playoff thing does matter, and I think that that does help somebody like Zach Randolph, you know, really get a look, or Marc Gasol if you want to go that direction, but I think Randolph is the better call. Like I said, it's hard to leave. If they're the number four team in the West, one of the better teams in the NBA, and to leave everybody off the All-Star game, you know, roster is you know, a little bit wrong and not fair, frankly.
Yeah, we should just have, you know, 20 All-Stars on each team.
Exactly.
And then, you know, we
baseball with this thing.
Yeah, then we solve all the problems. And every team can have an All-Star. We can spend 40 minutes introducing both teams, and it'll be fantastic. Okay, let's go to the Eastern Conference. Really, the Eastern Conference, I think, is where we could have some surprises, because once you get to the reserve guards, there aren't exactly home run type selections. There are guys that are good. There are guys that are kind of All-Star worthy, but there's, you could go a lot of different ways. So you ended up with Kyrie Irving and Drew Holiday. No issue with either of those guys, right? You know, Kyrie is fantastic. He's one of the best point guards in the game. I think he's a lock. I think Kyrie Irving's definitely going to get on just by the way that he plays the game. You know, people recognize he's got that All-Star talent. Drew Holiday, I think he did get some buzz, you know, in the last couple weeks, but the Sixers aren't good right now. You know, they're out of the playoff picture, and I think that might have something to do with it, might open up another spot. And, you know, frankly, when you look at the rosters for the last few seasons, there's usually three backup guards, you know, on the bench. So you got Kyrie and Drew. You got some other forwards in there, which we'll get to. You know, last night the Bucks were in Phoenix. I was at that game. Talked to Brandon Jennings about his All-Star chances. You know, he kind of went the Josh Smith route with that. It's kind of politics, but, you know, he also mentioned some other guys that might deserve to get in ahead of him. What about the Bucks? You got Monte Ellis and Brandon Jennings, you know, right around the same numbers points per game-wise. 18.9 for Monte, 18.3 for Brandon. Jennings' assist numbers are a little higher. He shoots, you know, he's obviously a little bit more efficient with his shot selection. Any chance either of those Bucks guys could sneak in? Milwaukee's currently in the playoff picture.
Yeah, I think there's a really good chance one of them could sneak in. I would go with Jennings over just on the efficiency thing over Monta Ellis personally. Although, you know, when Ellis is on, he's so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, night in, night out, Jennings does more for that team. He'd be kind of the guy I'd go with. The other guy, you know, not on my list but out there is J.R. Smith, who has the advantage of playing in New York, which is certainly a, you know, gets him a lot of media, gets him a lot of buzz. To me, he's a little bit up and down, a little bit erratic, but he's been better this season, and, you know, he's stepped up for them. He's played well. It would not surprise me at all if he made it. I mean, with me, Drew Holiday gets in just because he's had to carry so much. I mean, they retooled that entire team around having Andrew Bynum in the middle, and there'd been no Andrew Bynum.
Right.
So he has been the guy who's had to take on a lot of the scoring load and really controlling the offense and has gotten them as far as he has. And so I thought he deserved it for that. But, you know, you can certainly make a good case for either of the Buck guys or even, frankly, J.R. Smith, although I wouldn't have given him the vote.
Yeah, I mean, Holiday, you know, he's averaging 8.8 assists per game. So what you said is absolutely correct. I mean, he totally makes that offense go. He's carrying a lot of the load. I just don't know if the coaches are gonna go for that with the Sixers in such kind of dire straits right now. As far as JR goes, I mean, he's had an incredible season off the bench. I mean, Carmelo Anthony's missed some games. Those games he's been out, JR's just gone bonkers. He has some ridiculous game-winning shots, you know, on the season. You mentioned the fact that he plays in New York. You know, the Knicks could easily end up with three All-Stars if JR gets in, because Carmelo Anthony's already in. Tyson Chandler, I think, is pretty, you know, a solid selection to make it. But then you get the question, okay, do the Knicks deserve three All-Stars? Do the Heat deserve three All-Stars? And then do all these other teams just get none?
I think that that's just kind of the way of the NBA All-Star game, though. It's, you know, like we said, this isn't baseball where everybody gets to play and everybody gets an invite. And you know, the NBA is a star-driven league. And, you know, if you're going to put in three Celtics, I don't really have a huge problem with that. I mean, the fans voted in two. We're talking about the fans voted in two, and the guy they're leaving out is the team's leading scorer.
Yeah.
You know, it did 19.4 a game and gives them rebounds, gives them that kind of shot creation that they could use at times. So to me, it's just hard to leave him off the list.
Well, and you mentioned the Celtics and, you know, three potential All-Stars. It's kind of the same as the Lakers, right? I mean, those guys are getting in on reputation. The Lakers are out of the playoff picture. They got Kobe and Dwight starting the All-Star game. And then, you know, the Celtics are basically the eight seed, you know, in the East. They got two guys starting the All-Star game. Like you said, it's going to be hard to leave Paul Pierce off. You know, again, traditionally we get three guards on that roster. If that happens, who's coming off in the East? You're looking at Paul Pierce. Paul George, I think, has had an amazing season. I don't think you can leave him off. If you do add another one of those guards, who do you take off, or can you take anybody off?
Yeah, I think Pierce would be a guy in trouble, or you could lose one of the bigs. You know, I've got on my list Chris Bosh, Joakim Noah, and Tyson Chandler, and it's possible all three of them don't make it. Chandler might be the one that would go, although I'd hate to see. I think he's earned it. I think he's played, you know, just both on both ends of the floor for the Knicks. But Noah's had an incredible career, you know, year. And frankly, Chris Bosh, up until recently, and then, you know, all the rebounding talk around him, that's look. He's really actually had one of his better, more efficient seasons. He's played very well this year. So, to me, it's hard to leave him off. I just think they put in a system in Miami where he's not expected to do a lot, you know, a ton of rebounding, and he's got to space the floor. Well, you can't really space the floor and get a lot of offensive boards. He's got to find a way to do a little more of both. But
no, I think you're dead on about that. So we shall see. Next Thursday is when we get the reserves announcement, and shouldn't be any huge surprises, but there will definitely be a lot of conversation, especially in the Eastern Conference.
All right, now we are very fortunate to welcome into the PBT podcast one of the legendary point guards of the NBA and hopefully soon NBA Hall of Famer, Gary Payton. Thank you for doing this, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Being nominated to the Hall of Fame, that's got to be a kind of a crowning achievement and a nice bit of recognition for your career.
Well, yeah, it's showing that, you know, a lot of people have respected the things that I've done in basketball, and they're showing that they, you know, I've done a lot in basketball, and I'm really happy for it, because not too many people can get in the Hall of Fame, and it's a great honor. Hopefully I can make it, so it'll be a great honor, you know, and it'll be great for my family. Guy coming out of Oakland, California, who never thought he can, you know, would be in the Hall of Fame. Just thought I would play basketball in the NBA and do some good stuff and hopefully, yeah, make a good living. But it turned out to be that I was pretty good at basketball. I was pretty good at it and had a lot of achievement.
Yeah, and you did a lot of that up in Seattle. And it's got to be kind of exciting. Now there's a buzz about a team coming back to Seattle, which is something I know you've supported. You have to be kind of excited and hopeful that that's going to come to fruition.
Well, you know, I don't like to talk about it until it's done, you know, and hopefully it'll be there, and hopefully it'll come back. You know, the Seattle people deserve it very much. You know, they've been around basketball for going on 6 years, going on 7 years now, and hopefully that can be done, and it'll be a great thing for the city of Seattle.
Looking back at your career, you know, it was such a different game when you played in a lot of ways. I mean, you were such a defensive force, but you were allowed to be physical in a way that point guards now, you know, can't touch on the perimeter. There's a lot of stuff that can't be done. Talk about how the game is different and how you would have had to adjust what you did to play today.
Well, it would have been very hard for me to adjust it because I was very aggressive. I was an aggressive basketball player. I probably wouldn't have been on the floor too often because I would have had to be aggressive. Today, you would have to adjust by being a finesse basketball player and then just scoring. I don't know. But you got to understand, sometimes when you make a statement and you make a way that you play, some of these referees and some of the referees let you play. And I think that I would have had to try a lot of things for them to understand that that's the kind of basketball player I am, to be aggressive. I would have had to adjust to not having no hands on them. A lot of these guys are very explosive. They're very fast. And I couldn't have been pressing up on them. But in our day, these guys would have a lot of problems because we can hand check, we can hold you, we can do a lot of things, and they couldn't go nowhere. And we'd have been doubling up and jumping out, and a lot of players would have been getting hit. and it would just be a little bit different. I think that today's era is just a little bit more wide open. They want to score a lot of more, you know, and I think they want to go up and down, and that's what the kids want to see. They want to see dunking and scoring, and that's what their era is about right now.
What point guards do you enjoy watching right now? I mean, who do you tune in to see and maybe even remind you a little of you, if anyone?
Well, right now, you know, I like Damian Lillard, you know, because he's from Oakland, California, and he's a phenomenal basketball player. Should be the rookie of the year. He's playing very well right now for Portland, and I love his game. And you know, I've been watching Darren Williams for a long period of time now, and I like him, you know, and I think he's the epitome of an old school basketball player. He just goes out there and get it done. You know, he doesn't be fancy. He's not about all of going through your legs, doubling, you know, going through your legs three or four times, pulling up in your face. He just gets it done. He goes and gets what he has to done. He gets his assists. He gets his rebounds. He gets his points, and he tries to get his team to win. The things I don't like about him is the stuff I've been hearing about him, about messing with the coaches, getting the coaches fired. I just don't see that. I think players should just play the basketball game and do what they have to do and just play. Let the organization determine who's going to be your coach or not a player. And I don't really appreciate players to do that.
You know, one guy that's interesting to watch is, and certainly has a lot of talent, is John Wall, a very different player from you. But in one respect, he reminded me of you in that he struggled a little bit his first couple years in the season, and you weren't, you know, it took you a little over a season maybe to really find your footing and how to make your game work in the NBA. What kind of advice could you pass on from what you went through to him?
Well, just a coincidence that you have mentioned him. Me and him have talked a lot on the phone, and he's called me about the situation, the same situation, and helped him a lot about things, and I've been talking to him a lot. And first of all, I struggled for 3 years. I struggled really for 2 years. And then when George Karl got there, my struggles ended because I got a basketball coach who let me do what I wanted to do. I think with John is that he's a kid where he wants to learn, and that's the good thing about it. He can sit there and listen and take criticism and call players that he's watched in his young years to kind of ask for assistance. Some of these kids nowadays, they think they're so good that they can't ask anybody for anything. And the problem that we have is that they don't have older guys who have been in the league for a long time, because when they go to a team now, their leader is the same age as them. So they don't have respect like that. And then if they struggle, they don't know how to go and call somebody who's been a veteran before, you know. So with John Wall, I think that he's understood this, and he understands that he has to get his game better, and he has to go to work out, and he has to do things and make it improve on one thing. Because I think he knows that he's not good at something, he'll go and work out at it. And that's what I respect about him and a lot about his game. And he's going to get better and better because I know that he's got the mentality that he wants to get better. He wants to learn from a lot of other people. He wants to take advice from people, and he will get better.
You're actually working right now with Nike to do kind of a cool retro shoe plan deal. Is that correct?
That is correct. My gloves are the shoe that came out as me as the gloom. It will be restructured. It'll be coming out probably in October. We're doing the same campaign as Penny Hardaway did with the foam deposit. It's gonna be nice. I mean, Nike has been with me all my life, all my career, really. And, you know, I've been with them since college. I've been with them since junior high, high school, all that. And they're just giving me opportunity to bring a shoe out that a lot of kids are asking for, and hopefully it'll take off and do big things.
Yeah, that would be great to see. One of the things you were legendary for during your playing days was trash talk. You were one of the league's talkers, and that's kind of come back up in the last week with the whole Kevin Garnett and Carmelo Anthony thing. Was there ever a situation where you were able to really get under a guy's skin like that and kind of throw their game off?
Well, I did that a lot to a lot of players, to get under their skin and talk a little bit there. But what is going on in that situation is something that was said. I really don't know. People don't really know. It's always every time you get into that situation, people just speculate of what they heard or what they think. It's a lot of stuff that's going out there that he said a lot of things about his wife. And, you know, that's just disrespectful. You know, it's just the same thing about if you share something about somebody's mom father and they were sick and he died or something like that. It's just this fine line that you go through. You can talk this stuff, but this is nothing but a game. When it gets personal and people get their feelings involved, these guys can do anything. You know, they'll start wanting to see you off the court, do things like that. So we gotta keep it a little bit under control. But I think that Kevin is, he went overboard. I don't know what happened. We'll see. I think he understands and probably have talked to Carmelo and realized that, you know, the things that he did say was not appropriate.
Yeah. I mean, and you also had some legendary, defensive battles with Michael Jordan back in the day, who certainly would talk his share as well. Was that a fun battle for you both in terms of trying to defend him and just the kind of verbal back and forth?
Oh, that was great. You know, doing things like that, trying to guard probably, you know, the greatest basketball player that ever played the game, and me having an opportunity to be in that era to guard him. I used to have fun with it, you know, and I think he did too. You know, the challenge of me guarding him and me trying to stop him, and he trying to score on me because he knows I'm a great defender. We just had a great time, you know, and, you know, every time I see him now, we always talk about it. That's the first thing he come out and say, glove, and all that stuff. So we had a great time doing our era.
Were there certain things you could try to do to him, or was he just that difficult to guard because he had so many weapons?
Well, what you got to understand is Michael Jordan couldn't be stopped. He could just be contained, you know, because he was a great offensive player. And, you know, he can get to the free throw line, he can jump over you, he had great moves, he did a lot of things. But, what I try to do is I try to tire him out. I try to get him frustrated a little bit, and hopefully that I could do that. And it worked sometime, you know, but he still would get his 25, 30 points because, you know, with a guy like that, when he shoots the ball as many times as Michael Jordan does, you can't stop him. And he's going to make baskets. He's going to get to the free throw line. So I just try to contain him. Just try to tire him out. Don't let him get the ball easy. Don't let him get it in a comfort zone. Makes things difficult for him. And then try to get him frustrated into where he'll foul you and then get in a little foul trouble and then, you know, something good will happen for me. So that's what I try to do.
Great. You're also working in Los Angeles with a company called Thuzio to give people an opportunity to kind of meet players and have them at events, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. It's a good thing with Thuzio because, you know, it gives fans a lot of the memorable things with the athlete that they really, really wanted to meet for a long time. You know, some of these people, they look at these guys and be like, I wish I could meet Gary Payton. Now, Thuzio is giving you the opportunity to do that. You know, you can come and you can have me as a coach. You can have me as a dinner partner, a buddy, you know, go to dinner with you and your friends. You know what I'm saying? That is something that will be memorable for somebody for the rest of their life. You know, and people can go there and say, man, I met Gary Payton. This is real. I had him here. I had him there. So, you know, that this is what is a good thing about what Thuzio is doing because, you know, it gives you an opportunity to meet the person that you really wanted to meet all in your life.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. And then we had a game in London for some reason yesterday. The Knicks and the Pistons.
Globalization of the NBA.
I'm all for the globalization of the NBA, but that's, you know, that's what we need to discuss here. So, they sent the Knicks and the Pistons over there. Totally get sending the Knicks. You definitely want a marquee team if you're going to go out of the country to play a basketball game in the regular season. Unfortunately, the Pistons are not very good this year. I have to imagine that at the time they scheduled this game, they might have had an indication that the Pistons were not going to be very good this year. So the question... Two questions. Number one, do we need regular season games out of the country? It seems like an unnecessary burden on the teams with all the travel and all that type of stuff. And then number two, if they are going to send teams out of the country for the betterment of the game or for the globalization, shouldn't it be more of a marquee matchup instead of having such a lopsided contest?
Yeah, it's a little interesting to see the Pistons there. I think the thing that surprised me was that it was one game. I mean, both of these teams played one game this
right.
week. This has been done before. It was the Raptors a couple years ago, but they played two. They played like a quote unquote home and home, but I mean, they played two games, which makes a little more sense, you know,
right.
play a couple and come back as opposed to one game, it's been great for the Knicks. The Knicks are loving it. They were a banged up older team, and this is almost like a bye week.
Right.
They have one game, and it's against a team they can beat pretty handily if they're on it. They looked, frankly, a little fresher and a little more energized over there. Part of that's that, you know, it's the Pistons, but
right.
I think that worked out well for him. But yeah, I'm not sure if you're going to do this, you've got to find a way to make it really sing. And I know that they went to London, not because that's a hot basketball place, but because that's a place they want to build inroads, and basketball was certainly a draw over there during the Olympics, so they're trying to build on that. They sold out the arena. That was great. They had the Pistons home. You know, the Pistons is the home team, which means you got the Detroit basketball screaming announcer guy, you know, which had to be interesting for the London.
Mason, man, you got to love Mason.
Back into that. I don't really have a huge problem with it. I just think if you're going to really go through all of that, have them play a couple games, you know, maybe one in London and one in Manchester, or next year, you know, one in Barcelona and one in Madrid, where there is, well, you know, there's already a strong basketball league and a strong basketball following there. But if you're going to spread the brand.
Yeah, I would agree. I just think, you know, one game is tough. You know, clearly some guys are going to be able to adjust to the time change and all the travel, and some guys aren't. I definitely like two games. I would like to see more of a marquee matchup, you know, personally. I'd like to see two more competitive teams. I'm not saying send the Lakers and the Heat over there for two games necessarily, but, you know, you could add maybe Knicks Celtics or something, you know, second tier, you know, throw the Bulls in there. You could send, I don't know, the Thunder and the Spurs, something, you know, just more marquee matchups, you know, make it more of a bigger deal, more of an even contest. And I definitely agree that, that more than one game would probably be better in terms of accomplishing what they're setting out to accomplish.
No, I think you're right. And I think the point of having it a little bit more of a marquee matchup makes some sense. I don't, you know, look, the Pistons are certainly kind of a big brand in their area, but I don't think that they come close to having the, you know, the international appeal of the Knicks or the Celtics or the, you know, the Heat or the Lakers, or frankly, even somebody like the Spurs or somebody who has, you know, some recognizable international stars.
I would definitely agree with that. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Make sure to leave us some comments. Let us know how we're doing. And Kurt, look forward to speaking with you next time.
Talk to you then.